Welcome to Beat the Block, a podcast powered by BeatStars, the world's number one marketplace to buy and sell beats.
This is a show where we go deeper than the surface and talk about the best producers and artists in the game, not just about their successes, but also the blocks, dark times, mental health, and unpaid work that comes along with it.
More importantly, we find out they bounce back and turn their downsides into upsides to make a career out of doing what they love so you can too.
Get ready to experience this episode of Beat the Block. What's up, y'all? This your man, Ill Brown.
What's good? It's your main man, Trox.
Yo, and this is your girl, Candy.
And you are live with the Beat the Block podcast, powered by the good folks at BeatStars. How's everybody doing out there? I hope you're well. We got an extremely special guest. I am a huge fan, Candy, Trox. We're all huge fans of our next guest, none other than the incomparable super producer, Mr. Porter. What's good, family? How are you?
I am great. How are you all doing?
We're doing good.
Maintaining. Chilling, man.
Maintaining.
Big chilling.
So, Mr. Porter, we'll go ahead and get started. I want to rewind back to your childhood. You moved to Detroit when you were about 10 and you had a musical household. So your dad, he was a part of the Blind Boys of Alabama, right?
Yeah. My grandfather was, and my dad was the driver. And then he snuck and started having a relationship with my mom. And that's how I got here. So yeah, that's correct. That's pretty good.
So how did your granddad and your family influence you musically?
I think traveling with them, I was traveling this whole time. Like, as a kid, I was on the road with them. So when they had me, I was my dad's first child, my mom's second. I think just the traveling and seeing the shows, and I don't really remember, but I know that's what I was doing. And music, it was always just music around
you. Yeah, kind of like that natural thing that you kind of tacked on to. Would you say they are obviously the reason why you're in music today for the most part, right?
I got shot at 15. And that was, like, super traumatic. In getting shot, I, like, flatlined and went through this crazy thing. And then that's when music became, like, this thing. That's all that was left. I was playing football and sports like, you know, any other kid. Didn't really take to school much because I had siblings. So, my parents worked and it was like a fashion show. So I didn't fit into that. And, just got around the wrong crowd.
Detroit.
Yeah. Detroit. Yeah.
Right.
A fashion show. So I didn't fit in. And that's how I ended up getting into music. I think 2 years after I got shot and I went through that experience, I met Eminem. But I had already knew, like, IQ that hooked us up.
So in that traumatic experience, can you tell me, like, what is the thought process? I know a lot of people, they have, like, gifts and talents like music, and then when they go through something traumatic, it's like that's when the switch flips in their mind and they just, like, go all in. Would you say that that was something that happened to you at the age of 15? Or was it more like, well, this is all I got?
You know what? I didn't even think I was going to make any money doing it. I was just doing something. Like, it was more like, man, if we could just do some shows and do, like, shows like St. Andrew's held maybe 500 people, or, you know, that was a big crowd to us. So I was just kind of doing it and I fell into it. When I met Marshall, I was only doing beats 3 months. He didn't know that, but I tricked him. I was like, yeah, I got beats. And he came over, but IQ believed in me more. And I was just making beats in my basement, and I just would have been in the basement making beats and never really played any beats for nobody. Because I'm not like a people person like that. Well, I'm not like an extrovert. So I don't know if it was a switch. It just, you know how you just find this passion? Like, I think I heard Bonita Applebaum, and I was already up on like NWA and things like that. But that, Bonita Applebaum changed everything for me. That flipped the switch for me because I felt it. I felt that. I came from church and all of that music. And, you know, those songs, they'll make you cry and feel stuff. And that Bonita Applebaum song was like, that was it. That made me feel something. And I was like, all right, I think I want to do this.
That's really dope. I feel like we all have that moment when we hear something when we're young and we're like, this is something I can vibe to. This is something I feel. and I'm just super passionate about it. So what is it about the song that really got you? Was it just so that it was relatable, it was soulful, the sound, or was it like a personal connection through an experience?
I hadn't had a lot of experiences with dating or girls at that time. Like, I was just super quiet. And I was a late bloomer in that area. So that song meant a lot because it's kind of how, like, I would have approached a girl at the time if I was going to. So I kind of was like...
It's funny because the lyrics is, like, going through my mind. That song.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Benita. Glad to meet you. Like, you know what I mean? I think it was the jazz part of it because my dad was also a jazz head. And so that whole album, Low End Theory... Well, People's Instinctive Travels was first, obviously. But when Low End Theory happened, I was in it. You know? But I didn't know I wanted to make beats at the time. I started off rapping. And then I met Proof. And he made a beat. And I was like, you can make beats and rap? And then Pete Rock. And then, you know what I'm saying? Like, so those things influenced me. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I definitely want to do this. But I think that song, it just was relatable to me. Because I was like, that's how I would talk to a girl. I mean, well, I stole that whole blueprint.
And that's how you got
it. It didn't turn out for me, but it was, you know, that's where it came from. So that's really what got me, the feeling. It wasn't talking about I have been, you know, from the streets. So that music was different. So I gravitated towards it because it was an escape from
the reality.
Yeah, the reality. Yeah.
So your dad gave you the name Con Artist, right?
He used to call me that after I skipped the whole semester of school. He was like, you a con artist. You just going to skip the whole semester? Like, I didn't go to school for a whole semester. Like, I was just like, yo, I couldn't handle people. I didn't know how to conflict resolve. I didn't know how to, like, handle people. But I was not that many people in a place gave me, I didn't know what anxiety was. And I also didn't know what, I have some things just made me just not like that many people in a place. I probably should have went to a school for a performing arts school.
Right. How have you learned to deal with, like, the anxiety from, like, growing up till now?
I still deal with it. Like, I have it right now. Right? Like, I have it, but it's like you jump into it and you just start, you kind of take it on. So my idea is anything that you're scared of, you need to do more of. You get what I mean? Like, if you have a sensitivity to light, the only way you don't get stronger is by having it around, being in the light. So I don't know if I ever really, I'm meditating and a lot of self-work, it just made it a lot easier to deal with. It take a long time. I don't think you ever really get a grasp on it. You just have better days than others.
Right. I totally agree with that. Can you tell me about, like, the first 3 months you started making beats? What were you doing at that time? Like, how did you even get into it?
I had an SO1, Akai SO1. Trox, you know something about this. It had no sequencer.
Wow.
Yeah, so it had 8 buttons.
Oh, yeah, SO1.
And so the drums was here and something else was here, and I had to hit each one just like, I had to do it in sequence with my fingers. And I only had 15 seconds. And that's how I made the whole Infinite album.
Yo, wow. I'm amazed.
Yeah. That is insane. So
I didn't have any money. I just was like, I'm not going to do nothing illegal to get anything that I need. I could barely afford records. Like, right now, I'm not a professional digger when it comes to records. Like, I'm starving for records right now. Like, I'm looking for somebody that got, like, sample packs, not, like, that make samples, because I play and I can make samples and I use some sample packs, but, like, records. Because, you know, I can't go to the record store right now. But I didn't have none of those things. I had a Kai SO1. I just started making beats. I was like, Proof gave me a JD tape. His name was John Doe. And I heard those beats and I thought, it was like 30 beats on the tape, you know, 30 beats on each side.
Wow.
And it was almost like they weaved into each other, but really it was just him making a beat. He'll tape the beat and go to the next beat. I thought he did all of that in one night. So when I first got my equipment, I was making 15, 20 beats a night.
So nice.
That trained me. To just, it was quality, I mean, quantity. And all of them had to sound different. So that's kind of how I started. Like, it was just, it's a weird way to start, but I mean, my brain was, I didn't know no better. And I wasn't asking a whole bunch of questions because, you know, I didn't know a lot of producers.
Right. It's like when you first start, especially learning like a machine, Akai or the MPC or whatever, you kind of lock in, especially if you don't know anything. If you know how to hit record, or then you just go. So
you just keep going. I don't even know how I did that, man. I was just doing, I try to fill up a tape every time I made beats. And I mean, it wasn't all good at first. But when I met him, I just played him all of the beats that I had. He played me one song. We actually started with this song called Backstabber. And he was like, yo, I want to redo this. And I was like, man, you should rap it, but rap it slower. Because I hear what you're doing, but it's not translating. And then we kind of started, we did Backstabber first. And then we started working on Infinite. And that was literally, all of those beats is me first learning. That album is all like some of my first beats ever.
Wow.
Wow.
That's pretty amazing. Who were your influences when you started? I mean, I know that Proof kind of introduced you a little bit to the process, and but who did you listen to at that time to kind of build your sound?
I listened to Dilla. I listened to Pete Rock, RZA, Dre. That was like the people I listened to that I recognized. Eric Sermon. I wanted to be Eric Sermon. I was like, I want to be this guy, because he rapped and made beats. So then, like, D Nice, I was like, I'm the next D Nice. That was me. You know, when that record came out, I was like tripping. So I think my biggest influence, though, at the time was JD. Like, but I didn't want to sound like Dilla. I was, because everybody where we was from sounded like that. So
that's true.
And I mean, Quincy Jones was really influential, because I didn't know that he did all of those songs, but my dad had a lot of those records. So when I would go and get the records and take them, he didn't know what I was taking them for. And I was reading the back of it, and I was like, damn, why this guy's name everywhere? And that's when I realized what a producer was. And I didn't know, I thought Stevie Wonder was a producer first. I didn't know that was him singing. And I didn't know he did both. So that's what made me start doing both first. That was been my biggest influences, really, first. And then, you know, just went from there.
For the people that are developing, people that are starting to produce now, like, how would you think they should do it? Because really, you started out the gate with an artist, besides the first 3 months. I mean, M and you hooked up pretty early, but not everyone meets an Eminem in 3 months, or, you know, anybody. A lot of people stay in their room or the basement. What would be your approach in today's time to really get out there as a producer?
I had a crew. Me, my man Rich, and three. We was a group called Crazy Tones, and Dave. It was like four of us. So, and I was making beats. Actually, three was making the beats, and I didn't know nothing about it. But then when I started making the beats, I was just taking it so serious that I realized at that time, I was like, okay, I'm taking it way serious, more serious. And they, you know, want to live life. We were still kids. And I knew at that moment that it was like what I wanted to do ultimately. And so I think for anybody that's starting, start with some people that trust your ear. When I met M, he trusted my ear. He was excited to work with me. And I like working with people that get excited. They get the best from me when they're excited. You know, I can't work with people and they're not excited about working with me. If it's like just a thing where they're coming in and they just want to get music, that never really come out. So if for anybody that's starting, find somebody that trusts your sound, that like it, and they want to work with you, and they trust that. Start there. Everything else is like you just making placements. Placements is a game that you can play for the rest of your life. Once you do it, you can keep doing it if you're good enough. You gotta be willing to put yourself in the right place at the right time. But working with an artist, I've helped build one of the biggest artists of all time. For me, that was discovering him for me. Like, he wasn't in our hood. Like, you know what I mean? He was hanging out in the hood with us. Like, because it's like, yo, I got this dude. He's white. Like, whatever.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm telling you. And I knew once I heard it. So I would say start with somebody and keep working with people until you find somebody that you just really match with. That's how I would start today.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, everything has changed digitally, so it's really easy for people to find artists online. It's easy for artists to find beats. So I think that organic system, though, has kind of gone away a little bit because of that. Just a little bit.
It's old now.
Yeah.
You are the label. You the talent and you the label. So find the artist, work with that artist, and then, you know, don't make sense to do nothing else. Because if I had not have worked with him, I had my crew. But then at some point, my crew, they, you know, their passions was different. And so me and him had a lot in common with working together. And that just, look what it turned into. I mean, we tour together. Like, I don't like to say that I started it with him. The way that it is like, he's always going to see me as a little brother. I came out the gate as a producer with number one hits. Boom, 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 boom. He did a song on this part. No, it was like single after single after single. And then I was like, well, what good is it to be an A-list producer if my crew ain't really, it's not like it's translating. Because I was thinking it was going to be, you know, it's a career thing for me.
Right.
Like, that's my music family. So I was like, I wasn't really trying to go nowhere else to do that. It was like I stayed on that island. I worked with other people, plenty of people. But my biggest thing was like, nah, we in this together. Let's try to. And it was, I'm always still little brother. So I don't know what to do with that. I mean, that's why I just started doing my own thing solo-wise. So start with somebody and build, man. Like, labels don't even matter no more. Labels do not make stars. They just sign them. That's all they do.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's true.
They're not here to do nothing else. It's like, oh, we got this guy, and this is like, but you're not grooming them. There is a handful of people that groom. Like, Mike Horan is a good, I think he's a, if he had the things that he needed, I think, man, Nipsey's man, he was great for Nipsey. Like, I think it's Steve-O, I think his name is.
Yeah, which one are we talking? Are we talking about Steve LaBelle?
The guy that was with Nipsey, it was his man, his right-hand man over at Def Jam. There's a guy with him, and I know he had somebody with him that was like, that believed in him. He just rocked with him a lot, you know what I mean? So there's some A&Rs that really are great, but, you know, I could be misquoting, but I know a lot of them, but it's a lot of them that's just like there for no reason.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think we all know that.
And labels are finding that out right now. I guarantee you somebody paying for them offices is like, man, I don't even need all these people. You know, I'm pretty sure they like, it might be some people that ain't going back to work at all. Because technically, we don't need you to. They finding that out the hard way.
Ooh, they don't want to hear that, though.
I don't give a shit. I've always said this. And No ID proved it. Salam Remy proved it. Producers will always make the best A&Rs and executives.
Facts.
So if they smart, they'll start rethinking that and doing it the right way. I don't need them. They don't need us. They need us. We don't need them. Me and Royce building a whole system based off that. If they don't catch up, that's on them.
Mm. Yep. So you started making music in 91, but you didn't start taking it seriously until people like Dre and others kind of said you should. Is that right?
I was taking it serious. Like, I didn't know about being a producer. I didn't know. Look, I didn't know it was going to be like that. I just wanted to make a beat and put it on somebody's album, and then they can look on the back, because I used to look and be like, JD. I was like, and then I run and go listen to that song. That's what I started off wanting to do. And make beats for my crew, and I always wanted to impress my crew. I had no idea it was going to go that way it went. I thought, oh yeah, I'm going to make beats for D12. Like, that's my group. Yada, yada, yada. That's no different than me making beats for him. Okay, I'm always making beats for him. Yada, yada. I didn't know it was going to turn into what it turned into. I had no idea. People say they had these plans and this and this and that. It's all God's plan. It is all how the universe works. I get planning and being prepared. I believe in being prepared. But all of that, I knew it from day one. Okay, that's cool. Well, tell me what the lottery numbers are, too.
I need those.
Was there a point in time that you said, I'm about to go all in?
I don't even think I've ever done that. It's just like I never like put my all into it. Like, you mean like, oh, I'm going and I'm going. Yo, every time I say whatever I say I'm going to do, I tell Sabrina is like my right hand when it comes to Planet Dope. Like, that's my company. And Mr. Porter Productions, like, I'll just tell her at the top of the head, like, I'm going to do this, 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 and this. I have no idea how I'm going to do it, but I know I'm doing that. I say it once and I leave it at that. I don't tell a whole bunch of people. I don't post it. I don't do this. I don't do that. Because I could tell you something on Thursday and your kid could have made you mad Wednesday night. You don't have no bad intention to think nothing bad about what I'm saying. But you might have had a bad day or might have had an argument with your spouse or something. And I might be like, yo, you know what? I'm going to do music for this movie. And in your head, you might be like, oh, yeah, that's cool. You can do it. You can do it. But in your head, like, man, I don't want to hear this shit. My kid just broke my TV. You know, whatever the case. That negative energy just goes into what I just told you. Whether you like it or not, whether you want to do it or not, it don't matter. You have bad days. So I don't say, I say what I'm going to do to myself and to a person that believes. And that's as far as I go. Have I ever gave it my all? Like, yeah, I mean, I guess, I don't know. I'm always telling myself I got to do better. I cringe at listening to old shit. I don't listen to it and be like, yeah, that's... It's a couple of things that I feel like that about. But I have never felt fulfilled from anything that I put out. I was like, I felt good that it came out, but then I'm on to the next thing before it even come out. I might be messed up like that, but that's kind of how it works for me.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of super critical. I think that's like being an artist, you're always like your worst critic sometimes. So it's like when you create, that was where you were at that moment, but now you're like in a whole different moment, like a whole different energy.
If somebody asks me, if I play, whatever I did today, I did like two things today. I don't know what they sound like right now. I don't know. And I listen to them 4 hours in a row. I have no idea what that shit sound like. And probably won't. And I'm going to forget. Because now I'm doing this. I'm going to go take a nap. By the time I get up, I'm going to do some more shit. And then I'm going to listen to that and be like, oh, this is crazy. Because I forgot.
It's that creator's curse, man.
Yeah, you got it. I know you got it. I know you got it. I know Trice got it. Because I'll be listening to your beats like, damn, he don't never sleep. Like,
oh, man, like, come on. Thank you, man.
he got like, man.
So let's take it back to when you met M. All right. You had a mutual friend that introduced you to M at the hip hop shop. Is that correct?
Proof brought M to our school, but I was skipping school and I missed that day. So he came onto the school, and I think me and Rich and Three, because we was a rap group, we used to go beat on the lunch table like everybody else and then whatever. And Proof went to school, and then it became this big old thing. And then Proof brought M to the school. I didn't meet him that day, but he lived around the corner from me and I didn't know. He lived literally around the corner. And I used to walk past his house to go to my middle school. So that'll tell you how much of an introvert both of us are. I met him through IQ, though. IQ told him, because M kind of fell out with his producer at the time, Mannix, and then he needed some beats. Q told him about me. He showed up at my side door at my mama's house, my parents' house. My mom was home, my dad wasn't, and my mom was like, you better not be selling no weed. And I was like, man, no, he buying beats. She was like, what's beats? What is that? It's drugs. Yeah, that's how I met him.
That's hilarious, man. So eventually, M offered to let you live with him while you guys were working on Infinite. Is that correct?
We was done with Infinite, I think. And me and him became just close instantly. It was like we worked on beats and songs, but we just... That was just like, we just clicked.
What was the experience like working on that project?
A learning experience, like everything ever I've been through. I was always like, I'm telling you, I was always this little brother thing. Because when we had the album finished, and I was like, okay, this is it. But then it was like, he's like, man, I want those drums like that. Proof got an SP-1200, and him and DJ Head had the SP-1200. So we bought Proof in to change some of the drums. And I was like, yeah, I got some more to learn. So the next time I came back, my drums was slapping. You know what I mean? I had an SO1, so it wasn't like I was... they probably would have been, but I was just working with what I had. But the experience was just a learning experience. And we learned how to be producers first. So I went from making beats three, 4 months, stacking beats, to producing an album and learning about tape, reverb, mixing. I learned sonic correctness first. And that's how Dre Dre took notice. Cause I sound like I was playing samples. Like, it didn't sound like samples. It sounded like live shit. Just the way I used to make beats. Yeah, it was kind of like just a learning experience, learning how to be a producer, actually.
Let's get into your growth as a producer, man. You started executive producing, you know, records like Hell, The Sequel. How did you evolve from being an executive producer to basically crafting the whole entire album?
Well, the first thing that I realized was, like, I'll tell you what. Hell, The Sequel happened because I have always been in this position of having to, I feel like, prove myself. I think people misplace the place that I'm in, all right? This is probably the first time that I technically have said this, and even in an interview. People have a misconception. They think that I wake up, and if I want to do something, I give him a beat, and it's just there. Here, it just works. That's not how it happened. I have to submit those beats like everybody else. And somebody else might come along because they have a name and they get to just unload on them because we've been knowing each other forever. You feel what I'm saying? So
absolutely.
It's like, so I'm like, I got to work 10 times as hard. And that's what people don't get. So the way it happened was, Hell, The Sequel happened just like this. We was on the plane, me, Royce M, Alchemist. I think Al, we was leaving L.A., so we dropped Al off. And Paul was like, yo, we need to, what's up with this Bad Meets Evil album? It was like, all right, cool. And me and Royce was already working. And what happened was we went to, I think it was I Need a Doctor video shoot, Dre's song.
Gotcha.
First time I met Skylar Gray. And she got her own trailer. I was like, oh, yeah, I want to meet her. She's dope. She got a pen. Like, man, I'd let her work with her. I go get on the trailer and was like, hey, how you doing? I'm Denied. She was getting her hair done. She looked up and was like, who is this guy? Right? Oh, man. Played me. And I was like, oh, okay, well, nice to meet you. So I'm like already, I'm not crushed. I'm more like, I want to say something, but I'm like, let me just get away from here because I don't want to, you know. I go outside. I tell Paul, I was like, yo, man. This and this and that. I tell him what happened. Tell Paul Rosenberg what happened. And he was like, you need to get your weight up. And I'm like, damn. That was like another gut punch. Now, me being me, I take a lot of things I probably could have said something different or I could have handled that differently. But I was like, you know what? All right, cool. I went home. I just made everything that I thought that Hell, The Sequel should sound like. I started every song with either Royce or I gave the beat to him, and I just kicked that album's ass. Because I felt like even then, and that was 2010, I was starting over. Because I'm like, something like that happened, and then the person, they're like, I look at Paul like a big brother. So when he said that, I was kind of like crushed when he said it. And so I was like, you know what? All right, cool. Well, I'm just going to go and do what I know how to do best. And that's kind of how that happened for me. And it was like, I did so much shit. I did more songs, even actually more songs we just didn't use that I made for it. That was even crazier. We just didn't have enough room for it or something. That's how that happened. But I had already executive produced a Pharoah Munch album. I just didn't get credited because of something happened with some other producers. And I think they took the credit. I had scored movies. I had scored Waist Deep. Co-scorer with Terrence Blanchard, and a guy came in, took that credit. Now, this is not saying anything about me and my character. It's just how stuff happened, because when you moving a lot, I also was touring with D12. I also was doing, I was wearing a lot of hats. So when I'm wearing all these hats, I have to actually, you get lost in the sauce. So that's how it happened. That's how executive producing kind of happened for me. I knew that was my next step. I didn't tell nobody. I was just like, I just ended up doing it. And then I think they gave me that. It could have went differently, but and then every album, like Royce's albums, like I executive produced those with him, and I'm always involved in M's albums. Like I'm with him the whole time he recording. Like when he start moving around, he'll record a bunch of stuff, and then when he start moving around, I'm right there with him. Like, so it's just a natural progression. I think that now I would take it differently. And I'm sorry. That's kind of going on long. I hope that's good enough.
Oh, no, not at all.
Be our guest.
I just think that sometimes you have to, like, you got to keep doing stuff until that moment comes to you. I'm not an imposer. I'm not going to impose myself on anybody. You either see, either recognize talent and or not.
I respect that. So you started working on your own project. I'm fans of these joints, by the way, man. Stuff in My Backpack, the Great Depression AP. What's the experience of putting that, you know, that same energy into your own projects? How did you grow from that?
I'll tell you what. Those, and not to downplay them, I haven't even started yet. Those are like things I put out because it was like I had to get past my own self. J Electronica just did this. J Electronica was one of my first people that I groomed. J Electronica.
I had no idea.
Guilty Simpson. I'm telling you, that's why I say I'm not a talker. So, you know what I mean? And if they don't say it, I'm not saying this shit, you know? But yeah, like, I'm proud of him because he got past his own head. He was thinking about the climate of what things was, and he was letting that get in his way. I did the same thing. So Stuff in My Backpack, cool little project. Great Depression, that was just something that I did. All of those beats I did during the time that right after Proof passed away. And there was just all the beats that I did at that time. Mm. And I just put them out. And Connect was also something that I just did to put it out to get my feet wet. But what's about to happen is me putting my all into it. That, I think people will be pleasantly surprised, pleased, and happy. And I think my name will be in different conversations after these next two projects that I put out. It's inevitable. I just got to accept it.
So for the Great Depression AP, was that kind of, you draw inspiration for, you know, After Proof, I'm assuming, or?
It was during that time. I didn't remember making none of that stuff. I went to L.A. Dre was like, yo, come to L.A. I was a mess. He saw me. I was a mess. He pulled me out of Detroit. I went to L.A. I worked on a lot of stuff for Detox at the time, so some of those beats was from that. For that, but I didn't remember none of that music until Royce came. Me and Royce started working, and when he came around, Royce and Marv One was the only people that I gave beats from there. And I think I gave one to DJ Drama or something, but it was just a bunch of beats that I didn't realize I made because I was in depression for a couple of years. I was out of music. As far as the artist and the producer, I was just doing movies and TV, you know? And I was kind of walking away from it. And that's what that album represents. There's actually two songs. There's a song that I gave away, I was giving away, but I think the records, we did it as vinyl. I probably need to re-put it out, but we did it as vinyl with Fat Beats. It just didn't kind of go the way that, you know, that I thought. And I was giving a 45 away of a song, and there was only one person that was gonna get that 45 with that song on it. Actually, it was two songs. The last song I recorded with Proof, and a song I made for Proof.
So in essence, I guess that was your way of kind of coping with depression, making that project. And anytime you're dealing with depression, you tend to forget about what you're going through at the time. You're just trying to, you know, shed that energy or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Going through that situation at the time with Proof, man, what pulled you out of that? How did you get back into the swing of things?
M pulled me out of it because when he called me, I kind of was like, I was hesitant to do the hype man job. But in my head, I was hesitant. Like with him, I couldn't tell him no. That's just, we don't have that with each other. Like, I don't care if we 70 years old. If he want to go fight somebody, I'm going to go with him. Like, there's just kind of relationship we have. You know what I'm saying? That's the relationship we have. But in my head, it was like very tough because, fuck, this is weird because this is supposed to be Proof here. So first of all, it was emotional the first year. I was like not in shape. I was like not happy. I was in depression. And when something like that happened and your friend is such a huge star, people make that mourning about what he's going through, not what everybody else is going through. And my own self, I went and I had to deal with a lot. I ended up being diagnosed with atrial fibrillation, which is a heart condition. I had to cope with that, deal with that, learn how to live with it. And the scary part about it, I also was going blind almost because I had this thing called keratoconus cornice. And I found all of this out in the same year that Proof died. So maybe it was stress or those things, and I had to get implants put in my eyes, which was the craziest thing I ever been through in my life. So I was going through a lot of shit. I think M kind of pulled me out of it when, well, he didn't pull me out of it. When we went to Vegas, this fool gonna tell me, see, because I knew when they called me in December, they called me around Christmas time and they told me he was in the hospital. And I was like, well, I'm on the way because I didn't feel right. Bugs had died. Proof died. It was no way. I was like, this is, I felt like we was cursed. I felt cursed. Because in my heart of hearts, I knew something was more wrong than they was telling me. And they know how I am. So when we went to Vegas, he told me, that's when he told me he OD'd. And I was like, man, it broke me down. I was crying. I was just like, I couldn't even believe it. Because I knew. But during that time, we just rebonded. We was in the studio. He was working on Relapse. And so being around and seeing 50, and it was just like a good being back in the saddle with everybody. You know? And I think that day it pulled me back out. I went back to Detroit. I changed everything. I started back working out and getting myself back into shape. And a lot of prayer and a lot of, you know, self-work. I had to get a therapist. I had to go to therapy. I still go to therapy. And then I had to learn how to deal with fans. Like, people were saying shit like, I wish you died instead of Proof. Like, it was terrible. You know? Wow. And I go through a lot of shit. Like, because it's not a happy thing. Social media isn't always a happy thing because I have to fight through more smoke because it's not like you got these tags. It's not like you're a part of a big system, but it's not like that big system. That system is based on what M is doing. That system doesn't, it's not built to pay attention to what I do outside of that. So I have to do that myself. There's no help. When people see me doing things I'm doing that. That's me doing it. Mm-hmm. Now, that's me trying to cut through the noise of everybody asking, what's up with M? What's up with this? What's up with that? What's up with that? I know they're going to ask those questions, so it's not something that's going to frustrate me in that way. But it's also like, it's not always enjoyable because you got to shift and sift through all of that to get to the people that actually understand what your capability is. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I'm one of those people that do it. And M has, it doesn't rock that boat because I don't put that on him. That's my thing. You know what I mean? Like, that's, you know what I mean? That's my, like, road, my journey. So when taking that job, I knew that that was a part of it because I saw Proof go through some things. And I saw how he handled it. And I had to learn how to handle it my way. So.
That's an amazing story right there, man. You know, switch gears, man. I know you did a lot of scoring and composing on movies like Fast Five, Shark Tale. I also do film scoring and composing and stuff like that, man. What took you down that avenue?
I love movies. Every house I've been in, I had to have a movie theater built in it. And, like, I just like watching movies. I've been writing my own comic book for the last, I say seriously, about 5 years. I mean, creating actual characters, creating a universe, a whole universe. That's my lane there, but that's what got me into the movie. I was a big fan of The Spook at the Door and all of those black classic exploitation right films, Isaac Hayes and Marvin Gaye, and they would all make songs for those movies. And I think that's a lost art. It's so many great artists out here. I would have loved to see, like, Water for Chocolate be the soundtrack of a movie. A whole movie. Man. You know what I'm saying? Like, that, to me, I think we forget what power we have as artists. We should be having those. So my thing right now is that even with the power of Netflix and watching Issa Rae's show Insecure, I think that's one of the best music-supervised shows that I have ever heard, like, really. Like, I think Swizz did a great job with Godfather of Harlem. Black Lightning is incredible musically. Oh, yeah. I love what they're doing. And I think that I'm going to do some things in that area more because I just love film and how music ties to film. I wrote all of the stuff that I did for Waist Deep, I wrote to the script. I got the script from Vondi Curtis Hall. I was like, yeah, I'll do music for it, but I need to see the script. Because I wanted to read, and I was reading the play a part. I was actually supposed to play, was going to try to play the part that Lorenz Tate ended up playing, but I got so into the music, I was like, I didn't even read the right way for it. Because I got into the music. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do that. I love the way music ties to emotion because I grew up in that. So if you know about the Five Blind Boys of Alabama and just any gospel music, it touches your soul. And so everything that I do, I like making feeling music. And I think Trouble Man and Black Coffee, all of those things, they was moods. It wasn't just a bunch of music. It's not just people picking the hottest song. I go to trailers, like when I'm in LA and I go and I look at people's films and the music that they use for the placement, it's always the same song. It's like, I remember Black Skinhead 1 year, every time I got a trailer from somebody that had Black Skinhead, I was like, yo, y'all are tripping. This is not the only song like this. It's so many different ways you can go and make people feel things. And I think they don't, you know, because directors are just, they artists themselves. And and even though they love music, they focus a lot on, you know, making the film. And I think you should, you know, maybe we should make those things known, like a start appointing producers and people that really take those seriously. Let's go back to the days of, you know, Quincy and those guys doing those soundtracks. Those are art pieces, so.
Oh, absolutely, man. Like, Curtis Mayfield is my uncle, so.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah,
my God.
Yeah, as a shorty, man, I would be watching him create and
man,
be in
the
studio.
Man, let's do the whole interview over. I got to talk to you different.
Man, like, but, you know, I'm a shorty, and I'm running around in the studio pressing buttons, and one of the first things he did was, like, show me how to retape like 2-inch tape. He's like, you know what I mean? He's like, now you gotta do it like this. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. I'm thinking it's like a toy. And then as I'm starting to get older, my mom is bringing me around my aunt and uncle more and more. And you know, they're just socializing. And I'm picking his brain. I was like, yo, Unc, I'm like old enough to understand what's going on now. Fam, you was like really scoring the Mac and all of this. I'm like, in awe of my uncle for the first time. Now, I'm not just a dude just drinking up all the Kool-Aid, running around trying to press buttons on the machines. I'm understanding who he is, and I'm like, yo, teach me, show. I'm like a Jedi. Show me the way. I'm like, yo, I'm here.
I could imagine, because, like, across 110th Street?
Yeah.
Across 110th Street, absolutely.
Yo, man, I got songs like that just sitting in my house, like, waiting on those kind of opportunities, just because I love songs like that. You know, they still have a place. I tell you what, when this was over, I had already told myself I'm going to go see Tyler Perry and just sit in his office until something happened. Like, you know what? Let me change the game for you, homie. like, let's do something different.
You know, the thing with, you know, with cats like that is a level of authenticity that I think producers can play an important part in bringing out of those filmmakers in. You know what I mean?
We just have to get out of our, like, our shells because... And that's the one thing that it's inevitable. My next phase of my career is inevitable. And it's, I know how great I can be. I just had to accept I love like looking outside the window and going fishing outside or, you know, the things that I do. I love my comfort zone, but it's time to like, somebody got to set an example in a different way. I'm not going to do it how Swizz do it. I'm not going to do it how Tim do it. They all my peers. I love all of them. I love it. But I feel like there's a lot of places that's being missed. Somebody like Trox, who I know is like dope, like somebody like Khalil and Focus and Knots, like all of these people, we have these, we all sitting in a place because we humble people. So I want to definitely champion us, those people that have those kind of characters. And that's my step. I want to take it to the next level for that because I feel like we have a place. We just haven't put ourselves there. And I got the perfect opportunity to do it, so I might as well start it. I want to open doors. It's not about myself. I don't really have that. It's just so much I want to see for us as producers. Because we took too many hits in the last 5 years anyway. So.
Oh, man.
Oh, God.
We took a lot of hits. And, like, you know, hats off to, like, all of the, like, Zaytoven. Zaytoven is another one. I want to see him do a whole film, a certain kind of film. Like, I want to see those things because we matter. And it don't just matter because of these fucking numbers and what people be talking about. That's all smoke and mirrors. We matter because if it wasn't for that and if we weren't there, you wouldn't have what you call the bed of music. you don't have a bed to sleep in. You just got a big house, you know?
Indeed. Preach. You got to make a house feel like a home, man.
That's facts.
Yo, what up, Il Brown? I'm thinking of signing up for BeatStars. What's your experience like?
Man, bro, BeatStars came through for me at a tough time, man. Of course, the industry is much different now. It gave me a platform where I didn't have to build my own website, and I was able to upload my beats and sell them and engage with the community, man. I had a crazy first month, man. Did like 4K in sales.
Wow.
And I've been a fan and a member of BeatStars ever since. Sign up on BeatStars to start making money with your beats. Go to bit.ly/beattheblock1. Again, that's bit.ly/beattheblock1. Peace. Let's fast forward a little bit. Well, actually rewind, excuse me, on that one. I know you were signed to EMI Publishing, thanks to, you know, people like Rich Christina. And how were you able to get out of that deal and all of that? It was some crazy stuff going on at that time, man, for real.
I got out of that situation a little bit. Rich Christina, me and Rich Christina worked it out. And I still got more to work out with them. But today, I'm not into relationships anymore where I'm just going to do the work. I'm going to do the work, and then I don't hear from nobody until it's like, well, yo, you got this number one hit, man. Nobody care about that no more. That don't mean nothing now. Now they understand how important the artist is, how important these people are. This thing that's happened with Versus, those are producers that created that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's no label involved. There is no publishing company involved. Nothing. When we sit down and we make beats, I did a live the other day, and I was just playing beats, and I was just, you're pulling your own audience. They did not, I think, they need to start worrying about how they treat the people that they signed, because at some point it's going to be like, well, y'all worth is getting less and less, and now it's more companies popping up that can collect all of these things for us, and now we don't need you. And in those times mm-hmm. that you should have had them conversations, you didn't. And people can take that personally. Everybody not going to be me, because I'm not going to teach no producer, none of the young producers that I got right now, I'm teaching them how to be them without all of that. They won't even get a chance to come over to what our next, this whole system that we building, they're not going to be able to come over and do what they did before, because these kids are going to be more educated. So I love guys like Big John and Rich Christina, shout out to him, because he definitely, when he came over there, he was a man of his word in a sense. And we, you know, we still had some things to work out, but it's business. You know, they got to stop chasing the hot coal in the hot white spot, because that shit is, apparently it's not where it's at. I'm almost 20 years in now, and I'm about to make even bigger moves in the next couple of years.
So you mentioned before that you're more involved, especially like you said, you got the young producers you have coming up. Can you tell us a little bit more how you've gotten deeper into the business side over the past few years?
In the last 2 years, we got Heaven Studios. We moved from the one studio that I had in Oak Park, and then we didn't have a studio for about a year. And then one day I moved back home to work on Revival. Actually, I moved back home to work on Layers. And then we started working on Layers. I went back to L.A., and then I came back to work on Revival, found this studio, and called Royce and was like, yo, God called me. He said we need to come up to this building and look at this building that this guy called me from Chile and told us. And I was like, yo. And we called it. He was like, well, he said it sounded like Heaven. That's what. So it's called Heaven Studios. So yeah. In the last 2 years, we have focused on definitely making two just serious projects with him. I'm finishing my albums right now. We have Ashley Sorrell, Daniel Hex, who is actually Royce's son, who's incredible. Nassan is Proof's son. Now, Nassan is signed to Def Jam, which that should have happened a little different, but Nassan is family, and we, you know, that's somebody that, and this kid, Young Rock. And, you know, producers, engineers, guy, my man Brian is a producer. But then I'm working with a lot of young producers just in the city now. And what happened is in the last couple of years, we just saw the game changing. Artists don't know how powerful they are. We have so many powerful artists here, like Icewear Vezo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Icewear Vezo, Payroll, Sada Baby, Cash Dolls. Man, they go on and on. And they don't know how powerful they are, so we want to educate them. Our job is to educate them and pass that knowledge on to them and show them their worth. so that they do not make the mistakes that we made. And not that we made so many that we can't come back from because we're still here. But it's important for us to do that. I'm actually involved in with Jason Wilson, who is an incredible role model for the city. And young black men, he is doing a lot for them. And there, he has a school, and inside that school, I'm working on a school with him, a studio. It'll be a music studio, and it'll be classes that I actually will teach and other people will teach, and he's going to raise these artists right. That's the narrative right now, you know.
That's what's up. I know.
That's awesome.
Detroit is doing a lot.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that's just...
Definitely.
That's the tip of the iceberg. There's so many artists, man. I just ran into this producer, Ink Red. He actually is one of the only people on my album right now that did a beat besides me. And he's incredible. He is incredible. So I'm just learning, finding artists as I go. And Race, we doing the same thing. I'm pretty sure I'm forgetting somebody, but like Marv One, obviously, he... We got a lot of people.
That's the homie there. Yeah.
I think the narrative for me right now is that, and I mean, I'm about to shake shit up though. I ain't even playing. I'm gonna start a journey just because I feel. You know what I want to do? It's like I would love. I just want to see. I want people to feel something with music. But what I do, I want to do. Like I was talking about those. Dedicate a whole album to a movie. It don't gotta be the biggest movie in the world. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah,
it don't have to be the thing. It's like,
just a good movie, a dope movie.
Yeah, just something dope that feels like, you know, or a show that's like I'm inspired to do those things right now for myself. That's just something that I'm doing that I want to add to the list of things in my career. I'm looking forward to this coronavirus being over.
Man, you're telling me.
If it's going to be over.
I got to get the fuck out of Portland, man. I've been here for too long now, man. All right, so... Switching gears, something that isn't talked about nearly enough in this industry is mental health, of course. You've told us quite a bit about how you dealt with it in your past and even today. But we'd love to hear like more about what you do today and what you think producers, especially those not in a good headspace, how they should handle their mental health. I know everybody's different, but we just like to hear an example.
I'm currently in the process of actually writing. It's a very short, just a short pamphlet kind of book. And it's about the health, your actual health in the studio. Things that I've learned that you have to do. Like I said, I have a heart condition, right? So I have to get up and walk around after 20 minutes or so. I have to set a timer on my watch. I do push-ups, whether it's push-ups or whether it's, and I walk around. I built, and everybody can't do this, obviously, but whatever space you create, this room here is very small compared to the room in heaven. And that room, I told Royce, is even too big. I was like, I don't like big rooms no more. Like, I like small rooms because, and it's a replica. So outside of this door, there's a meditation area. And on the other side of that, there's a gym. And on the other side of that, then the other, there's a game room and then there's a theater. So my whole flow is basically before I come in here, I meditate and I have a space that I meditate. There's a sauna. It's just my space and it's a neutral space. Those doors stay closed so that energy stays there. I did that because of my depression. I don't even deal with depression as much as I used to. Actually, I haven't had that problem in a minute.
That's good to hear, man.
But it's something that's always there. And that's not that I don't acknowledge it. I'm just constantly doing what I gotta do to make sure that I'm not depressed. And that the first thing that I do is I pray. I don't care what God it is. I don't care what people call it. I don't believe in fighting over religious stories and what's this and what's that. I believe if you believe in something, that's what you do. And the first thing I do is I know that there's something bigger than all of us. And I wake up. Before I deal with the world, I don't talk to anybody. I pray. I meditate. I check my health. And I'm talking about everything. Like, there's tools that I'm going to put into this book that people can do, like certain devices that you can get. You can check your blood pressure. You can check all of these things. And you can keep a note of it just on your phone. I do all of these things so it gives me a peace of mind. Mm-hmm. Secondly, before I come in the studio, I go to the gym. That's why the gym is on the other side of that door. right? I don't care if it's 10 minutes. I don't care if it's 15 minutes, right? I do something. If I take a break, you know how this is, Trox. You be doing something, you stop, and then you kind of walk, and you'll go to the kitchen. Yeah. You listen to the beat so much, and then you got to, you know, you walk away from it. When I walk away, I stop in the meditation area, and normally I'm going to sit there for a second. I might sit on the bench and just play whatever I'm playing to calm down. Before I won't even make it to the kitchen, so I end up getting water before anything, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, so I just have it set up for success. I would tell anybody, the first thing that I would tell them is, like, when it comes to your mental health, make sure that your place is set up for success. If you got chips around you, that's a failure. If you got negative things around you, that's a failure. The only thing that's in this room are things that make me happy. There's nothing that's that makes me unhappy. My schedule ain't here. My phone, the alarm system is here because but that's not going off at 3 a.m. If it do, then there's a problem. It starts within. And I think the biggest thing that I can say is we are leaving this earth in a box, everybody. Mm. I don't care if you getting cremated. We leaving earth in a box. I refuse to live in one. And when I say that, I mean, don't care about what society doing. I don't care what social media is telling you to do. I don't care what your girl or your husband telling you to do. I don't care about none of that. What are you doing that you need to do for yourself in that moment? If it's a person in your life that don't want you to work, they get mad at you because you can't work because you didn't call them back or you did. If they can't accept what you do, they not for you. And it don't mean that you get to be selfish and just forget them. But if that's a part of you and that's what makes you happy, never set that aside. Because that's the one thing God gave you that makes you unique. Everybody on this call is unique. Everybody. Right? There's no person mm-hmm. like either one of you. Not one. There's not one.
Not one of ones.
Dr. Seuss said it best. There's nobody youer than you.
You know what I'm saying? If you meet somebody and they can't accept that difference about you, just won't work. And then, you know, relationships, you got stressful relationships. Hey, we looking at right now, everybody's stuck in their house. Mm. You didn't think it was going to be like this 3 months ago. Everybody thought the summer was coming. They was getting their summer body together, and now they look like donuts. Right? They literally, we all like, I'm talking about, everybody was in the gym. When I was going to the gym up the street, I was going with my cousin. I was showing her how to like do certain stuff. And I'm in there and I'm looking, I was like, yeah, everybody in here and they in here, right? Guarantee you, they did not think what was gonna happen is happening, right? So if life is that short and it could change that fast, you might want to, like, stick to your guns and do what makes you happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, facts.
I know of 10 people right now that's close to me that I lost.
Damn. I'm sorry to hear that, man.
I literally, the only thing I can say about this has been tough because I've had, like, thoughts where it was like, oh, my God. You know, I had some bad thoughts, and I had to get myself together, you know? I did an interview a week ago, and they was like, can you do it at this time? I was like, absolutely not. I got to work out first because I got to take care of me first. Whatever you got to do today is going to be there tomorrow. That same problem is going to be there tomorrow.
Facts.
So you might as well take your time and do what you got to do. But meditation and get a therapist. Don't be afraid of that. And nobody should be afraid of a therapist. It might take you a minute to find one, but I'd rather talk to a stranger about certain shit because you can't talk to. That's like if you got a relationship in your life and it's like, I can't talk to a girl that I'm having a problem with her about the problem I'm having with her right away. I gotta work it out first and then talk to you. Cause then I'm like, I might say the wrong thing. And now we got a bigger problem. I wrote this in a song. I said, it's always gonna be back and forth cause with us it's like a tug of war. You hurt me and then I hurt you back and then we argue over who hurts more. Right? That's every argument.
That is.
And that's even every argument in life. Nobody's really fighting over that. Nobody know why they don't like Asian people or white people or black people. Nobody even know why. Black people might know why we have a problem with what's going on because we watching each other get shot. But you ask a white supremacist why he hate black people, he can't even tell you. If you ever think about it, have anybody ever said, what's the real problem, sir? They don't have an answer.
It's just blind hate.
And then even when we say the word hate, it's such a broad thing. I hate when it snow and the rain fall into the... I know exactly what I hate. When you just say it's hate, What do they hate? They just hate what? They don't have an answer. So I'm telling you, figure all of those things out. Your mental health. You can't be creative if you ain't right in your head, man.
That's real.
That's true.
Straight up and down.
Yeah.
Straight up and down. So a lot has changed since you helped create Infinite, right? What do you think producers should be focusing on today, not just to have a successful career, but also a fulfilling one as well? Like, they should feel good about their career.
That's a very tough question, because who has a career today? What is that? Nobody got a job right now.
That is 100 right there.
That is.
Wow.
It's not a good answer for it, because, like, I can say my career is like, oh, shit, well, I can't go on tour. I have worked so much on being good at that and growing into that, and that has become like a huge part of my career. But ain't no career right now. I'm at the crib and I'm creating. I read something today. I was like, do anybody need to put an album out? Why would they put an album out? Well, if you don't put it out with a dance, it don't really mean nothing. This is how a lot of people think. If you don't have a song that's got a TikTok dance, it don't really matter. That don't mean shit to me. Mm-hmm. I'm still going to work on that album, and I'm still going to put it out because it's content. At this time, everybody ain't going to be TikToking and doing it. Like, I'm not doing the 2C slide, my right. G. I'm not doing the 2C slide because people dying around me. So the 2C slide might make me feel good for 2 seconds when I watch Will Smith or somebody else do it. But the reality is, somebody is outside. This guy threw a birthday party the other day here, and there was a bunch of kids there, and it was like, I was hurt, because I was like, man, I don't know how genuine this thing is. Like, he was, you know, he was showing emotion, he was crying because he got his kid there, and his son was like turning 8, but I was looking at it like, man, you just got all of these kids at this, it was a birthday party at a house in the hood. I'll tell you what, I'm not thinking about the 2C slide when I see stuff like that. I'm actually thinking a 2C slide might be the problem, or a TikTok dance might be a problem. Kids do feel cooped up. People feel cooped up, but they also want to think. I mean, they also want to feel something. You can't dance every problem away. You know what I'm saying? This is the time where if you don't got nothing to say, you might be in trouble. You know? You really might be in trouble. You know? Like, I heard, what's the dude, 6ix9ine? I heard he about to put an album out or something. When I saw that, it's like, the fuck for? What are you about to say? What are you literally about to say? I'm actually curious at what he about to say at this point. Because it's like, bro, I get why you did what you did. You jail ain't for you. But I don't really know if I care to hear what you got to say, though. I heard everything. You said you was real about that. What you going to say now? I grew up, and now I'm this, and that. And what you going to make, conscious music? I don't know. Everybody got a place. Everybody has a place. But who has a career? We all trying to figure it out. Everybody's trying to figure out. You know what we could do right now? You know the best thing we could do is say, hey, if everybody stop for 1 second and be like, hold on, wait a minute. We got all the control.
Mm-hmm.
No labels moving. If people streaming. But every artist could say, well, I'm not putting no album out and I ain't doing nothing else until y'all pay me the right amount of money for these streams. Because guess what? We at home and people streaming all day, we should be getting paid triple and double. We should actually be getting what we supposed to be getting. Because think about how much money they would be getting. They wouldn't worry about that. I would rather see Young Thug and all these dudes is getting all of these spins. I would love to see them get their just dues, because then they would be able to help their own communities even more. Right now, in a minute, they'll start looking like lunch to some of these people that don't have what they need. You get what I'm saying? Like, when it get really bad and we run out of food and we run out of these things, this stuff people ain't thinking about. Everybody should stop and be like, hold on, wait a minute. Labels ain't got no answers. Neither do these streaming companies. They only paying us pennies. How is it possible for how many, what, let's say 30 million people a day? How is it possible for 30 million people to be streaming songs, even on Pandora, and even if you just got a radio playlist going, and your song out of a day might play 20 times, and you make what? A 10 cent, if that? How the hell is that cool? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, when are we going to start asking them questions? Because nobody got a career as far as I'm concerned. We all trying to figure it out.
I think it's time to ask those questions now.
That ain't a career. That's a dictatorship. That's slavery. Mm-hmm. You're no different than somebody making shoes in China for $2 a day.
It's real.
Why we come up? You know what makes it different? That show money ain't there. So now all of them need to start look, because we already been on this. We already been on it. Shouts out to Jay-Z for paying people correctly.
Yes.
Shouts out to them for titling them. And they end up, and they might end up having to sell their company, right? Because technically people ain't figuring it out yet. They ain't even figured out, why is he able to do, wait a minute. We should be getting more. You should be getting that across. That should be the standard. Artists got to start saying, look, the standard is, no. You're not selling my music to Apple Music or Spotify or this and that. You can't sell my music. The standard is this. So if you ain't coming with that, go ask Young Thug. He gonna do this. Go ask Kendrick. He gonna say the same thing. Go ask J. Cole. You know what I'm saying? If everybody just got on the same page, Lil Baby popping right now. I love his music right now. As much as they playing it, I know I played his album 3-4 times in the last week. You feel what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Cause he's good at what he does.
He's good at what he do, and I fuck with the music. But I bet you what? He ain't doing no shows right now.
Nobody is.
Right.
Ain't nobody doing no shows. So I'll be wondering why the hell I ain't getting, man. We are doing shows. We doing shows because if I'm on Twitch and I'm playing PlayStation and somebody playing Lil Baby in the background, why he ain't getting paid for that?
Right.
There you go. Flat out. So that's the kind of shit that all that career shit, none of us got a career. What we need to do is come together. Everybody need to be getting on a group text and just be like, hey, what's the standard? What's our standard? We need to tell the labels what our standard is. They can't. How they telling us what the standard is? That's like me going to the store and saying, hey, man, I'm going to give you $50 for this $250 game. But it's your store. You bought it at wholesale and bought 30, 40 of them, and I'm going to tell you how much I'm paying. What kind of shit is that? That's what we letting them do. And that's the kind of questions I think we need to be on. We watching history happen. You watch what happened with Erykah Badu and Jill Scott doing their thing.
Man.
Yeah. Watch what happened. They're going to shut it all the way down. I wouldn't even do the shit if I was Swizz and them. I wouldn't have done Teddy and what's called. I'd have stopped then. Because they already showed them what we can do. We not, now
giving
it's
away
like,
sauce at
yeah,
this
now
point,
you
right?
now
yeah.
you're giving it away for free. Ain't nobody gonna want to watch it on TV 6 months later. We already seen it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have stopped after the first or second one and been like, and then what good is it to them? Because remember, now mind you, Swizz and Tim made it popular. It was already done before that. It was just shows. Alchemist and Just Blaze did it.
Yep.
On the road, Preem and I think Pete did it. They made it popular online. The pandemic happened, and boom, it became popular. So we know, I know what time it is. But you should have switched them, should have stopped and been like, okay, enough's enough. Y'all know what we can do. Matter of fact, we're going to create the platform, and we'll just do it after the corona.
Exactly.
You feel what I'm saying?
Exactly.
That's what I'd have been on. Like, man, these queens, you about to give Erykah Badu by herself is a whole 3-4 villages. Jill Scott is another 3-4 villages of people. You got 3-4 villages in each state that's gonna watch that. That's not including out the country. They're gonna shut that shit down. You thought Babyface and Teddy Riley was big.
It's gonna be huge.
That was big because that was across the board. Like as far as you got white people that listen to that, along with black people. Like, you know, so they like, Babyface pulled his guitar out and said, I'm going to play my white people song. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's because he know that he got that kind of family. But watch, we will see what the culture actually can do when you see these two queens get on there. And both of them, my people, I love both of them. They're going to pull in the crowd. That you're going to see girl power. That's like Beyonce going on IG Live. Beyonce better not go on IG Live. She's just like, don't even give away your songs like that. Like Rihanna, don't go on there. They shouldn't even go on there. You know?
I agree. It should be a platform already created. Like at this point, yeah. Yes.
Not somebody telling us, well, we can only do this.
An hour.
Yeah.
It's gonna shut down.
See what I'm saying?
After 15 minutes.
Think about that concept.
Yep.
You're the power. And I'm going to tell you how long you can do something. That's slavery.
Yeah, that ain't cool.
IG could do anything.
Now, mind you, when I say that, somebody, you could take a clip of this and put this out and guarantee you one of the comments. Somebody be like, oh man, he racist, he pushing it. How come is it when somebody black say something like that, white people get so uncomfortable? My best friend white, he don't get uncomfortable if I say something like that. You know why? Because he knows what time it is. You know what I'm saying? Like, yep. It only people that make uncomfortable is the motherfuckers that really think the other way. And the common sense is, Erykah Badu and Jill Scott, nah, y'all queens. Y'all ain't got to do that. And you know what, Swizz? You already showed us what you can do. Just wait till it's over. Everybody going to come watch it still. Matter of fact, we going to come to the show now when God allow us to come back outside.
Just create the Versus app.
That's it. Create a Versus app and do it there. Fuck them. Yep. Fuck them. Because guess what? That's going to be better money. And you can pay the people instead of just, you know what I'm saying? Not saying that everybody got to pay for something, but they're going to pay you for that. Whoever do the app, they're going to pay you the advertising dollars anyway. What do you think? Yep. You think labels don't pay artists for them streams because they already sold their souls. What the fuck you going to pay them for? We already own their ass. You know what I'm saying? Y'all, he in a 360 deal. We got him. Whatever we want to do with his music, we can do. That's jail. It's like, you might as well get caught stealing Twinkies from the store in the suburbs with a pistol. It's jail. If the one thing that I have realized through this whole thing is that we are like, we need to smarten up. The music industry, we need to smarten up. We just not being smart. I think artists, especially these young artists that's got so much power with these streams, they need to start and look in it because they're supposed to be sitting back like this right now getting paid. You're supposed to be mailbox pimping. When I came into this game, that's all I cared about. I said, how can I be a mailbox pimp? You know what a mailbox pimp is? That means you get paid to sit in your house and collect checks. You know how you do that?
That mailbox money.
Mailbox money. I could own all the real estate in the world, but people can't pay their rent right now. Right. So I'm in the same boat as somebody else. Feel what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So everybody in the same boat. If I was these artists, as powerful as somebody like Lil Baby is with his content and things like that, man, please. 2007, I met this guy named Dr. Henry Nichols. He created broadband. He said he had this idea about every artist having a direct connection to each other, to their artists. He said, what did you make last year? I'm going to look at your tax records and I'm going to pay you. I said, I made about $1 million last year. So I'm going to pay you $1 million a year. I said, for what? He's like, you're an artist. I pay you $1 million and you whatever you make after that $1 million, you make that money and those artists can connect right to you on your phone. We should have been doing that anyway.
Yep.
But then you know what happened? Apple Music came out with this thing called Connect. I remember seeing it on Apple Music, and it was called Connect. And I'll never forget it.
It was a whole platform.
They have a thing right now where you can post pictures on your Apple Music profile.
Yep. It's just like a Facebook. Repost the song.
I'm on all that.
The disconnect comes in this way. Every time I take somebody on the road from my hood, ain't near one of them be like, yo, man, I want to be a manager. They want to be a rapper. Or you want to be a promoter. Or you want to do a clothing line. Or you want to do all the shit that everybody else used to do already. Nobody said, man, I want to learn how to make apps. I want to learn how to code. You get what I'm saying? That's kind of shit that we need. We need coders. If I was an app developer right now, I'd be reaching out to every artist possible and working out a deal with them saying like, yo, you can make your own app. I can do it in 3 weeks. Let's do it right now. And all your music can go right there.
That's the only place you can get it.
Yep. And this is the only place you can get it. And if you want to stream live, all you have to do is go to your app, period. That's the future. That's the future. Y'all heard of Oculus, like right? Y'all up on Oculus?
Yeah, of course. Indeed.
I'm trying to do a release party. I want to do a virtual release party. And I don't care about putting this out there. Somebody else can have an idea. I don't give a shit because I'm trying to do it right now. And my album, I wanted to come out, and I'm going to send people an Oculus. I'm going to send so many people an Oculus, like, hey, boom, this is my release party. You can't come to my release party anyway, so you might as well do it this way. There's no way. Put the glasses on, and there I go. Here I am. We going to listen to my whole album, and you can hear it right there on the thing. It's the best shit in the world. If you don't think forwardly, you're thinking backwards, and everybody keep thinking backwards. I'd be looking for my money if I was these young dudes, man. I'd be looking for it right now. All them streams, like, wait a minute. What you mean a million streams? That should be $1 million.
It should.
And it's not.
Yeah.
It's not even a quarter or inch of that. 1,500 of these is one.
Ooh. I just appreciate when somebody's stepping up for us and you're saying shit like this.
Everybody be scared to because they be thinking about what they got invested. But I got a crew that I fuck with. My crew is the best of the best. You can't fire me from being talented. We got to stop acting like that. They can't fire you, Trox. Who gonna tell you you can't be something? Why do that matter? That's not how this works. How are you going to fire me from being Denon Porter? Are you insane?
Can't take my talent away from me. Can't take your talent away from you.
I hate the word blackball. Now, unless I'm going to see men in black running outside my house, you ain't blackballing me. Everybody know it. I had a conversation with Jimmy Iovine. We was having dinner at his house, and he was having a similar conversation. It was he get it, and he ain't even really connected to music as much. He got problems with certain shit. In a way, I was looking at him like, Jimmy, you used to do the same shit. Shut up, man. You remember Boys in the Hood and shit? You know, Boys in the Hood, like, you be doing that same shit, Cube. Like, wait a minute, Jimmy. You was doing some of this whole shit. I get it. I know Drake get it. Drake a forward thinker. Drake a futurist, too, but he not no evil-ass futurist. That's why I love him.
Facts.
You know what I'm saying?
That crew gave me a shot, and I will always be appreciative of that, man.
All of them. When you're talented, you're talented. That's why I said, can't nobody take nothing from you. We got to stop acting like that. I don't mind doing business with labels, but don't tell me about no standard. I'm going to tell you about yourself. Mm. Once you start saying that, and this is standard, like, I'm going to give you that dead stare. Who's standard, sir? Call me when you figure it out, because I don't need to be right here.
Facts.
You get what I'm saying? Like, it's not like I gotta be sitting right here. It's like, I'm just here because we, you know, talking about doing business. We either gonna do business or we not. And when you do business, they either gotta start doing business correctly. I don't know if y'all know how it works, but let's say you put an album on January. It don't take that long. It doesn't take that long to calculate how much you sold, right? The game is they get the money, they put it in a bank account, and they make the interest. If you made $30 million in February, and you ain't paying nobody out from none of that. You paying people from the year before, and you ain't paying people from the February on to the next quarter. You holding the money, so you making interest on the money.
Right.
But they don't pay you the interest that they make. That's the game. That's like me saying, come on, man, we're going to go in business together. We're going to make this beat, and we're going to sell it to this person. The album come out on a Thursday in February. Or April, start of a quarter. Let's say come out in April. By the time October roll around, you should be getting checks for that time. But they ain't gonna, you might not see it on that one. You might see it on the next one, the next April. They holding the interest. So where mine at?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mine's was a part of that $30 million that you held of everybody else's that's on this label. That's just the game. At some point, they got to figure it out. I know they figuring it out now with all of them people sitting at home that they paying their salaries to do nothing. Them artists ain't calling them like, hey, I'm finna go live, boss.
Nah.
Nope. You feel what I'm saying?
Boys, I'm live. You know what I'm saying?
It's only a handful of people that's controlled like that. And if you control like that, you the fool telling you when you can do something. Like, what you talking about? Come on, bro. That's crazy. Because there are some people that can't rap at all. They just good at being artists. They actually a character. It's
100% truth right there.
It's some characters that's losing money, and all they can do is do antics and this and that until the doors open back up and they can do antics and those kids. The other part about it is kids are growing. So the kids that like some of the shit that's the bullshit, they growing right now. And think about how fast they're growing. Their grandmothers are dying. Their mothers might be passing. Their fathers might be passing. So now they're dealing with real life, and they don't want to hear that bullshit you're talking about.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So next time when you come out of it, how you going to come out of it, and what are you going to be talking about? Because now your fan has just, his life changed. He taking care of his brother and sister. He got to get a real job. Yeah, it was all cute and fine and dandy when he could just go do nothing. But he just lost his parents, and you got nothing to say to him of substance. You feel what I'm saying? It's like, oh, the old niggas like, man, shut up. You must be playing again, yo, losing your life before you get here.
Right.
The wildest shit is like, I was talking to my little man, and he was like, man, Chief Keef old as hell. And I was like, he 24.
What does that make me? I'm 30.
I must be a damn dinosaur.
Here's a very scary thought. People over 50 are at higher risk right now. I'm upset that people are bringing that shit home to their grandparents and their mothers and fathers because I love talking to old people. Man, I got the illest sayings in the world. I was in a fucked up relationship at one point in time. And this old dude told me, I said, man, I don't know what to do. He said, bro, you going to the car lot trying to buy a boat. I said, damn, that person ain't for you. You trying to make her into a boat and she ain't a boat. She work at a car lot.
You want a boat? Get a boat.
You want a boat? Get a boat. She not the boat. Old people got more wisdom than anything. Young people got more, they fearless. They not smart. I ain't saying they not all like that, because I know some very bright young people. But for the most part, you fearless. You're not wise. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Fearless don't mean, like, just because I'm cautious don't mean I'm not fearless. I go outside every day and do certain things, and I stand up in front of people, and I put myself on the chopping block just like everybody else with your talent. That's fearlessness. You have to be fearless in doing it. I have to believe without a shadow of a doubt, that I am worth something. That is fearlessness. I'm no different than you, homie. What makes it different is that I know that in that fearlessness, I still have to think about what I'm portraying and what I'm saying and how it's going to get across. Because if I'm saying this now, and I don't want to be saying sorry 5 years later for some shit I said when I was your age. I already been through that. Like, we can talk about this whole era of what these artists and rappers are now. I be feeling bad sometimes. I had a song called Purple Pills. We had a song called Purple Pills. That was about popping pills. Yeah. And now that's all they do. I was like, some of them, I'd be like, oh, what's up, man? Yo, you might want to slow down on them pills. Like, you know what I'm saying? And I think about it, and it's like, I had to forgive myself for being that. It was great at the time. Right? But I understand how they think, And it's like, they forget that you was even in that position. But it's like, bro, the reason you're able to say that is because I said it already.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we already got in trouble for it. They took records off the shelf. They didn't do that to you. You're welcome.
I remember when they took those records off. That was crazy.
I remember when they took it off.
And I remember they was like, man, you got to change it. You got to change it to this. Like, oh, yeah.
Purple Hills.
Yep.
Couldn't say that on the right. Couldn't do that. And it was like, man, you know how hard it is to have to go through and do a clean version of a song that's already disgusting? Let me make it disgusting and still make it fun. Like, come on, we was kids. We didn't want to do that. Like, what we had to do that for? We just be mad as hell having to do shit like that. But I'm saying, like, when I think about that, it's like, come on, man, I'm not asking you. I don't want nothing from none of them. You know what I want from them? I want them to be smarter than me. Just because you have money don't mean you're smarter than me. Because, bro, you could live down the street from me, and I'm going to still be in my crib 20 years from now if I want to be. Matter of fact, I can move into a bigger one. Where are you going to be? I don't care how many investments you think you got. Some of them probably think they got certain and solid investments, and you probably listen to certain people and certain things, but nobody has a career right now because nobody got a real job. And who paying your rent? Who's paying the rent at the house you own?
I'm going to switch gears real quick.
Uh-huh.
I know you got some crazy industry or crazy proof stories. I know you do.
Proof stories?
Ty Ferris has told me a few.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Ty probably shout told you some ones time. That I didn't know.
Did you know about the one in Vegas around 5 o'clock in the morning? Roundhouse kicking bouncers?
I've been through that with him plenty of times. we was doing a show one time, and a dude, Proof, just jumped off and kicked a dude in the back off stage. I don't even know what the dude did. And I jumped off after him. And we got to fighting, and then the police pulled us out of the place. I don't even know. We were in Turkey? We were somewhere weird, and it was the Turkish mafia.
Damn. Oh, shit.
I remember something like that. We did a show somewhere, and this guy set it up, and we was like, we ain't doing this show. They ain't paying us, and this is that. And the Turkish mafia showed up and had guns, and they wouldn't let us leave. I remember that.
Damn.
But Proof jumped out of the stage one time, kicked the dude. Then when they carried him out the club, he had his ass out. His butt literally was out. He was dragging him this trash can. And I'm like, he was like, you ain't do nothing. I said, what the fuck I'm gonna do with these big ass bodyguards, man? We was already getting kicked out. Did you forget that we was on stage? What you even kicked the dude for? What did he do? I didn't even know. Like, I'm like, we was arguing all the way. And by the time we got to the hotel, I was like, man, bro, your whole ass was out, though, bro. I remember one time we was on stage, and Proof, he was fucked up, man. And he literally, he came out on stage with no pants on and an S on his chest. I don't know where he got the spray paint.
Wow.
And he spray painted a P on his chest or some shit. It was like all kind of, like wild Proof stories, but... One thing about him was the one thing that we, you know, people always tell these crazy stories, but Proof was brilliant. He taught himself how to read Hebrew. I don't know a lot of people that do that. He's very fluent in a lot of things. Like, he learned a lot of shit. He read a lot. He wrote a lot. Proof wrote, like, literally wrote a lot. I remember he used to write letters to people. He would write letters or write postcards to his family and stuff like that and friends, like, on the road. And that was one thing I saw that he did, and I was like, that's the realest shit ever. He would make sure he'd go buy a bunch of postcards, and we'd be in his room sending postcards. Like, I remember one time he told me, I was, me and him would sit on the back of the bus and would just listen to the beats. We loved just sitting back of the bus listening to beats. And I was used to it because I was traveling as a kid, and I think watching the hills pass on the back of the bus just reminded me of the road. And we were sitting back there one time, and he said, And he said, I was upset because it just when you go on, you lose a lot of people, like relationship wise, like friends, girlfriends. You can't keep a girlfriend. And I was really upset. And I was like, you know, all of them was married. And I never told the other guys that it bothered me, but I would tell Proof. I was like, man, I just don't know. You know, they was married and they was, you know, they had their wives. And he said, man, shut up. One day you're going to call me from a hill. Just gonna call me randomly from some hill and marrying somebody that I ain't never met, right? And literally, he told me this. And it was just, he knew how to say certain things, and I just never forget that. So now, it actually created the way I know how I want to do it whenever I do, right? Because of that story, because of what he told me that day. So I know, you know, some people have their way of how they want to propose and all of that kind of stuff. He was such an important person to me that I just listened to everything that he said when it came to certain things, you know? And that helped me actually I stopped being down on myself for not being, because I could have married somebody and been in the wrong damn relationship for the rest of my life. And that, my friends, would be depression, for sure. Being married to the wrong person. So he saved me from a lot of shit, you know? Proof, he had a lot of crazy stories, but he was a brilliant dude and really a really compassionate, loving person, too. I miss him. I miss him a lot. I miss him a lot, man.
I've heard the same thing from everybody else that I know that have associated with him, you know? Ty, you know, shout out to Ty, man. That's my brother right there. And he told me the same thing. He's a brilliant dude.
Yeah, super smart. Super smart. And it's just crazy. He was like, I wish I had his talent for being able to network. His networking talent was incredible. He knew how to network with people. He was just a good person. Just a really good person.
Man.
Facts.
So you've accomplished so much. We're all, like, of course, huge fans of your work. And,
I appreciate
you know, just even sitting here and just getting game from you and your perspective on the industry. I know that, you know, people that listen to this interview will definitely appreciate it. But in the near future, because I know you got plans you talked about with the next albums you have and what you're doing with the community and back at my hometown, Detroit. So shout out to the D and all the artists.
From Detroit? I know you're from Detroit.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
We ran into each other a couple of times. Funny story, T-Baby, she used to actually sleep on my couch when she used to come up to college.
Really?
I went to Western, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So she took over my room when I moved out from my roommate. So.
That is my baby. That's my daughter. That's like,
yeah, I know. She told me, and I just didn't. It's funny how, like, I mean, that was years ago, how everything just come back around. So
in my studio, I keep her picture in the studio, picture me and her all the time.
It's like crazy how everything just go full circle. So I just let life happen at this point, because you just never know how it's going to turn out. But tell us before we get off, like, what the people can look forward to in the future.
I'm working with RJ Payne and working on a project with him.
From BSF, right?
Yeah.
And yes, sir.
I'm working on a project with him. And I'm working, Bobby Creek Sensei is so back. We have an incredible album right now.
Creekwater?
Yes.
Oh, let's go.
Right now, it's like I'm at the halfway point, so I'm switching gears and I'm gonna change like the production to like we started off a certain kind of way. It's amazing so far. But outside of that, I think Young Rock got another project coming out. We working on Ashley Sorrell's first album, full album.
Yeah, she's super dope.
I'm also working with Mike Stroh. You know Mike Stroh out of L.A.?
He Battle Cat brother, right?
Yeah, Battle Cat brother.
Yeah.
So he got a project. I'm just kind of like overseeing this one. But he's on my album. RJ on my album. And I got an album called Reflection coming out that I'm finishing now. That's what I'm actually actively writing right now. And then another one that's done is called DefCon. That one is more the fans that I have now with the D12 fans. Like, they'll be a little bit more, that's easier for them to digest. But
gotcha.
The Reflection album is totally different. It's almost like What's Going On, but a rap. It's a hip-hop version of What's Going On.
Mm.
Marvin Gaye, What's Going On. And it's a mixture
right
of that.
There.
I'm excited for that.
That one I'm super excited about because it's my whole heart. It's just reflecting on things like I have a song called Thug, Traumatized Human is Unable to Grieve. And it's basically why men cheat and why we do certain things because we don't grieve. We told you can't cry, you can't do this, you can't do that. So it's touching on stuff like that. Flawed, got a song called Flawed But Loved. That is like, it feels like What's Going On, but if you could imagine, if it was just reimagined, if, you know, like today.
Indeed.
Then me and Royce working on a lot of shit, so. But that Reflection album, he got on me about, he's like, look, you need to start painting these verses like somebody. I'm just like going now. You know what? I got this shit. I was working on. I just started. I got like 5 beats for it. I'm thinking I'm gonna do this thing called 404 tape. The 404 tape. So SP 404 beats and shit.
Oh, nice.
And the funny part is, I'm not using one. It just sounds like I'm using one. It's
gritty.
Yeah, it's nasty. I think I'm gonna end up giving a lot of these beats to RJ though. RJ Payne, because it sound like him, sound like the sound that we looking for. I gave him one yesterday and he just started going at it. So I'll see. But yeah, reflection is the most important thing. That's my thing right now.
Word up.
I feel like I can speak for everybody when I say we're all excited to hear that. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely.
I'm excited to share it. I wish I could just snap my finger and it'd be done, because Jesus Christ.
Right.
Try not to overthink nothing and just, I have to just, when you sing it, I have to sing it. And I can only sing, when I'm singing something, I have to sing it and leave it. I don't go back a lot of times because it's hard to write these things. I have to feel them.
Right.
Yeah.
I have to feel a lot of it. If I don't feel it, I don't even go in there.
I get that. So where can we find you on your socials, man?
I think I Am Denon is on Instagram. That's the only one I really mess with because I don't know shit about that stuff. I hate social media.
I get that.
Facts. I appreciate y'all, man.
Hey, no doubt.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah, we appreciate you.
Absolutely, man. It was a pleasure having you on, man. Denon Porter, it was a pleasure of ours, man.
Thank you.
That being said, we gonna close it on out, man. I am Ill Brown.
I'm Trox.
And that's your girl, Candy.
I feel like I should have a tag. I feel like I should have a tag when y'all do that. This is Ron Burgundy, signing out. Tag.
There it is. And we see y'all on the next episode. Peace. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Beat the Block. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. It helps the show a lot. See you on the next episode. Peace.